Good health is a crown worn by the healthy that only the ill can see. Your health really is your wealth. Join us for the next hour as we explore disease and attaining and maintaining good health. This is Dis-Chem Medical Monday, brought to you by Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
And you're listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Nicholas Ingle. It's just gone 8 minutes past 10, and we are chatting today with Dr. Clementine Chawane, psychiatrist. We're talking bipolar, as it's currently World Bipolar Day. And we're looking forward to chatting with the doc. So let us have your questions on our studio number, and we'll do our best to get the doctor to answer them for you. We're looking forward to having you join us.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
You're listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 Chai FM. I'm joined by a fantastic guest. I always get nervous, doctor, when the psychiatrist's on the show, so just don't judge me too much. I am a little bit crazy. Lots and lots of coffee this morning.
Hello, Vaisa.
Absolutely. Dr. Clementine Chawane, thank you so much for joining us. Doc, tell us a little bit about bipolar. What is it? And maybe what are some of the misconceptions around bipolar? Do we call it a disease? Do we call it a disorder?
Yeah, okay. Right, so we're calling it a disorder according to the textbook, but it is a disease. And I think it is important that we clarify that, because sometimes when we say it's a disorder, it's like we have a choice. You know, if you order your life, then you will be without the illness. But if we see it as a disease as well, then we understand it as would understand diabetes and HIV and hypertension and cancer and all the other illnesses. So it is an illness, it is a disorder, it is a disease. And so sometimes it's just the interchange of words. So to simplify bipolar, let's just break it into two words. There's bi and polar. So bi is for two. All right, so it means that patients with bipolar experience two extremes of moods. So it's bi for two, and then the polar is for poles. So you have two extremes, poles of mood, where you experience extreme depression, and on the other end, you can experience extreme euphoria or dysphoria. But all of them come with associated symptoms. It's not just the feeling sad or feeling euphoric or dysphoric, and everything else is not affected. And we need to understand that it's an episodic illness. And so it's not ongoing. It's not that in the morning at 9 o'clock, I'll have a depressed mood, and then by 3 o'clock, I'm having a euphoric mood. It's an episode where you can have a sustained mood for a while, and then it has other symptoms that will go into it and as I go further into it. And then on the other hand, you can have episodes where you experience depression. There are those patients who experience what we call mixed episodes, where they will experience both the depression and the euphoria in the same episodes. But that is not as common as experiencing either poles of the mood. So in basic terms, that's what bipolar is.
Your description is absolutely fantastic, and I love the fact that you stressed it's a disease and it's not a choice. I'm saying this, I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober for 18 years.
And congratulations.
Thank you. And when we understand that alcoholism, addiction is a disease, we can remove a huge element of beating ourselves up, that it's not a weakness of character, it's not a choice. The behavior is not a choice. And I think that's something that can really negatively affect someone and their relationships, where people just say to you, oh, what's wrong with you? Stop behaving like this. Yeah. It was, oh, just stop drinking. You know, can't you just have two? And I got a sense of the disease when I was drinking, because I was either on top of the world or in the darkest, darkest pits. And I've always said to people that for me, the greatest gift of recovery is the ability to feel multiple things at one time. It's
great.
It's mind-blowing where you can feel sad about something, happy about something, nervous, all at the same time, these multiple feelings. And then you learn to almost compartmentalize them and put them aside while you feel them, but not allow them to affect your behavior. So, you know, for me, I really have tremendous empathy towards people who are suffering from the disease of bipolar. So what are some of the treatments, Doc?
Yeah, so, you know, so the treatment, maybe if before we can go into treatment, the symptoms that patients can experience, let's say maybe when they are having what we call a manic episode. And so we have two types of manic episode. We have the manic episode and we have what we call the hypomanic episode, meaning that is the milder side of the mania. So the mania is euphoria, okay, so extreme joy, extreme happiness, and it is associated with feelings of grandiosity. So some people start feeling like they are more pretty, are more powerful, more rich than they actually are. And so they go around saying things and doing things that they wouldn't otherwise do in their normal state. There is also decreased need for sleep at that time. So you feel like 2 hours of sleep is adequate. And even though you are sleep deprived, you don't feel tired. Which has keep going. The other symptom is increase in goal-directed behavior where somebody just keeps wanting to do things, whether it's cleaning, and so you will spring clean the whole night. It is spending, so people go there and overspend and buy things that they don't need. Religious people sometimes can go into a prayer spree. You know, and so the family will say, we don't sleep. This person has been praying 24/7 and they don't seem to get tired. Yes, they are a prayerful person, but this is way beyond what we know and know them to be. And so whatever we like doing, we can sometimes just do it in extreme. If we like exercise and then we spend the whole day in gym and we don't seem to get tired. So there is that, there is increased energy, like abnormal energy where your mind is just always going and your body can keep up with it. You have racing thoughts and you start thinking of great ideas and you start daring and doing things that you normally wouldn't. Okay, so that is a state of euphoria. And sometimes people experience dysphoria with the similar symptoms. So instead of being extremely happy, they become extremely agitated, extremely irritable, and they become aggressive. And so most of the time, sometimes that's when we admit patients, is when they're in this state, where is the euphoria and or the dysphoria, where the family can't keep up with them. A partner say this person has increased sex drive all of a sudden, and this is not something that is within their character. So that is the mania. And then the depressive episodes is when you're feeling sad most of the time, most time of the day. You are sleeping all the time. Even though you feel like you're sleeping, you just feel exhausted. There's decrease in appetite, decrease in motivation, decrease in drive. And you're just not quite yourself. And that's when suicidal ideation comes in as well. And this can last for about 2 weeks at the time. And sometimes people are able to rebound from all the states. And some people need to see a psychiatrist or to be on medication or to see their GP to be regulated back into well-being. So when it comes to medication, there are different types of medication depending on the symptoms and the severity that the patient presents. And so in private, for instance, we tend to see patients when they are depressed because that's when they are not functional. So when they are euphoric, they feel like they can do a lot of things that they couldn't do normal days. So they don't usually come and complain about being functional because they're feeling great. But when they experience the depression, that's when they come in and they say, I'm not functional. So it's very important that your doctor diagnose bipolar and not depression. Just because you present with depression, we need to make sure that we take a thorough history to make sure that you've never experienced a manic or a hypomanic episode, because that changes the diagnosis, all right? So once the diagnosis of bipolar has been established, the first line of treatment, according to the FDA and the SAHPRA, is that we must put you on a mood stabilizer. Okay, so we have different types of mood stabilizers. We have sodium valproate. I'm going to use the generic terms. We have sodium valproate. We have carbamazepine. We have lithium. Lithium is still a gold standard for bipolar, and yet people are scared of it. And I think ever since we started with load shedding and people started hearing about lithium batteries, they just think, oh my goodness, I'm taking acid or something as potent as something that could be put in a battery. No, lithium is still a gold standard. There are some side effects that we can monitor and manage. So it's not that we can't prescribe it. And then we have other medication like lamotrigine. So how we choose the medication depends on the patient profile, your gender, your age. There are some medication that we cannot give to young females because if they fall pregnant, it is dangerous to the fetus. You know, so we try and tailor make the medication according to your profile. It's not a blanket treatment or an all generalized approach. And so another thing is that we can give what most people would know as antipsychotics.
Okay.
You know, so, yeah.
So, Doc, can we're going to go to an ad break, and then when we come back, I want to chat further about the medication. And what I'd also like to talk to you about is the value and how important it is to build an ongoing relationship with your medical professional, your healthcare practitioner, so that you can get the balance of the medication right and understand that it's a long-term process.
Yeah.
Dis-Chem Medical Wellness Clinics for Adults offer convenient and professional care to help you manage health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offer you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care. Find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside Dis-Chem Pharmacies. Better health starts here.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
You're listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 High FM. I'm chatting with Dr. Clementine Chawane, psychiatrist. It's Bipolar Awareness Day, and we're chatting about bipolar. We've covered the symptoms, what to look out for, and most importantly, the fact that it is a disease. It's not a choice of behavior. Let us have your questions on the WhatsApp number 0618951019, and we'll do our best to get the doctor to answer them for you. Doc, just before we went to ad breaks, we started chatting about treatment and medication. And just before we get back to that, I also wanted to touch on, we could do it after that we talk about the medication, the importance of building a long-term relationship with your healthcare practitioner. It's not about taking medication and if you're feeling not great or you don't think it's working that you stop or you switch to another way. It's about building that long-term relationship. Thank you. Back to you, doctor.
Yeah. Great. No, it really is. You know, when people say, well, psychiatry is expensive, I'm like, it's actually not, you know. Just think about it. Like if you go for surgery, it's a once off, we cut out the tumor, and if you are clean, we never have to see you again. But psychiatry and psychology is a long-term treatment. And so you must be willing to work with somebody. And it's not always just reaching a place where you are well, you know. So once my patients are stable, then it's like, okay, now that we're stable, what are our goals? What are we achieving? And, you know, and so I do see people every 6 months and they don't experience symptoms anymore because we have found what I say, a right concoction for them and they are well. And now it's just about helping them live their outmost life, you know, that maybe they had a setback just because of the diagnosis. So yes, it is a long-term commitment and you should stick to the program. And so I was talking about the second line of medication, which is now approved as or registered as antipsychotics. So you would hear patients taking, I'm taking olanzapine, I'm taking aripiprazole, I'm taking dopa, I mean, quetiapine. And so if you go to Google and you're like, this is medication for schizophrenia, why am I taking medication for schizophrenia? So some of the antipsychotic have been FDA and SAHPRA approved to treat bipolar disorder, whether it's type 1 or type 2. And like I'm saying, depending on your profile, those, that's something that your psychiatrist will explain and the rationale behind moving into an antipsychotic. Sometimes we use it in women of childbearing age because the other medication can be teratogenic to the fetus, meaning that it can harm the fetus. Or sometimes we do it because the first line medication is not working. Or sometimes we do it as augmentation. So the first line medication, the mood stabilizer I've mentioned, are not adequate. Then we have to augment it with an antipsychotic just to help you reach equilibrium. Sometimes we do have patients who experience a lot of depressed episodes. So they are bipolar. We give them a mood stabilizer, but in spite of that, they still have breakthrough depression or the breakthrough depressive symptoms that is affecting their functioning. And so your psychiatrist can sometimes consider adding a antidepressant on top of the mood stabilizer, just so that we can be able to achieve some homeostasis and that even when you are having a blue day, your functioning will not affect it.
Right. And that's such an important word that you mentioned, homeostasis, because at the end of the day, we're chemical machines, we're hormonal machines, and the balance in the body is going to determine our function and our quality of life. But I think what is vital, and in working with a medical professional, for me, as an alcoholic, I go to meetings. That's my treatment. I sit and understand. I worked with psychologists. And to gain an understanding of myself and to gain an understanding of what I'm feeling may not actually be what I'm feeling.
Yeah.
What I mean, I might be feeling sad and down and low, but, oh, wait, man, that's chemical. Or have I eaten correctly? Where's my blood sugar? How's my hydration? Mm. All of these different things. And going into meetings with other people that are going through the same thing, start to realize that it's not me. And I think that's absolutely vital to understand the work you do with your medical professional is to attain homeostasis so that what's going on in your life and the stress and the pressure and the anxiety that we all live with, you can then manage as best as possible.
Yeah, no, very true. That's well said. You should be on the interviewing side. I mean, I should be interviewing you. Yeah.
With pleasure. And one of the things as well that I think is potentially more dangerous is the euphoria, because then you start to take on things that you may not be able to follow through on. Someone that I care about dearly, a very dear friend, has bipolar, and before the medication was balanced, they were buying cars and buying TVs, and you have a good credit rating, but now you go and destroy that. Is there something that one could then go back, to the banks or to say, listen, this needs to be stopped or to reverse? So how damaging can that euphoria be? And is there a protection for someone suffering from a disease? Just as someone in a wheelchair has an access ramp to get to a building, are there protection methods in our society for those suffering from bipolar?
Oh, okay. All right. That's a loaded question. Yeah. And it's a good question. And it's I'm going to give a set answer to say no. Okay. And the truth is that, yes, when people are manic, they get very, very extremely impulsive and they get involved in risky behaviors. So there is some protection. I just don't want everyone to say, well, I was manic, the doctor is going to write a letter and everything is going to be resolved.
Sorry for that.
So there are circumstances, so some people even commit crimes. And so we would have to then come in and give report in retrospect to say, were you manic and are there other symptoms that could justify that you were manic? I have had patients go and take up loans that they can't repay, and then the You know, the bank usually says, no, you are liable. And so because we still have a long way to go when it comes to mental illness, there isn't a lot of protection. And one of the things that patients with mental illness suffer is damage to reputation. You know, so sometimes risk to self is not that you are going to harm yourself, as in most of us fear suicide. But sometimes risk to self is risk to your reputation, your behavior, your finances. Because, yes, when you are manic, you can do a lot of things. You can say a lot of things. And when you are better, most people are still holding on to what they experienced when you were manic. And they might not necessarily let go if you raise a middle finger to your boss at work, you know, and then a few weeks later you are stable. The boss might still say you are fired because of your behavior then, because sometimes it's difficult for lame people to differentiate or to put a line to say somebody has now come to a point where they're not in control of their emotions. And so I appreciate such platforms because it helps us to educate people, because there are a lot of people who say, who thinks that you, it is something that is within your control, you know. But one of my best friends as well has bipolar. And if you want to listen to her story, she has a site called Vocal Mentality. And she shares a story about how she was diagnosed at 14 and she navigated the process. She's now a medical doctor, but it was a difficult thing for her to navigate. And one of the things that she would do was stop the medication. And then she will have a relapse that had a huge impact on her reputation. And some of those consequences, she still suffers up to today. Because human beings are not as forgiving, especially when it comes to invisible illnesses like mental illnesses.
I think there's a huge amount of fear and misunderstanding where people almost shut down their empathy and their ability to connect out of fear that, you know, it almost, is it contagious? You know, or that I don't want to deal with this now. Because what you're speaking about, and I'm feeling this quite intensely.
Yeah.
And as an alcoholic, my behavior when I was drinking was horrendous. There are relationships that are damaged to this day that are unable to be repaired. And it's taken decades to repair relationships. The relationship that I'm the most grateful for is the one that I was able to rebuild with my late father, and that we had. So, but it was nearly 11 years of being sober, but the last few years were absolutely wonderful, and I got to spend time and connect and be a son to him that he deserved.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't deserve the alcoholic. But I think alcoholism and drug addiction has a lot better empathy and understanding within society than mental illness does, where people understand it's not you. And the gift of being the, an alcoholic or an addict is understanding that the way that people treat us and deal with us may not be them, and it's certainly not a reflection on us. So I hope through platforms like this and what you're sharing that people understand that mental illness is a disease. It's not a choice. And I think as well, to the point, we're talking about depression, and if we can touch on that aspect as well within bipolar suicide, you know, it's not a choice. It's a short-term solution. It's a long-term solution to a short-term problem. So if we could chat about the depression side. And then also, just before we go to ads, I'd like to talk about sort of, are there specific demographics within our country that are affected more? Sort of, you know, is nutrition and upbringing a component, brain development a component of bipolar?
Okay. All right, great. So yeah, I will touch into this. So yeah, the depressive episode is a very dark place. And, you know, by definition, according to our textbook, when you're having a major depressive episode, it's like your body is unable to feel happiness. So I will tell my patients, if I were to throw you in the pool of happiness, you'll come out dry. Your body just somewhat refuses to acknowledge all the good things that are around you. You know, most people attribute depression to the things that are happening around them. But there are people who tell you that everything in my life is perfect, but somewhat I'm not able to feel the joy. I felt the void. I felt the emptiness. And, you know, then you isolate yourself. Then you don't want to be with people. You always turn down opportunities to go out. And people think you are avoiding them. And so you become isolated. And when you are isolated, you're vulnerable, because that's when you start having negative thoughts about, no one cares about me. No one will care if I'm not here. And, you know, they're wanting to end the suffering. Then sometimes result in people wanting to self-harm. And as a psychiatrist, I have met a lot of people who have attempted suicide. And one of the questions I ask is, how do you feel that you didn't succeed in your plan? And I can say that about 90% of the people I've interviewed are actually happy they didn't succeed. And they will tell me the intention was not to die. I just wanted to rest. I just wanted to end the bit of the suffering. And so it breaks my heart when somebody succeeds, because then I was like, maybe if they had a talk with somebody who could have helped them see another angle. Because when you are depressed, it's like you're seeing life in one dimension. And in your dimension, it's hopeless and it's not going to get better. The sun is not going to rise again. But when you speak to other people, we don't dismiss that you see life as that. I acknowledge that it is tough, but my responsibility is to help you see other angles that your depression might be preventing you from appreciating, you know. Right. So, that's how it works. I forgot the follow up question.
No, I'll get to that now. So, one of the things that I'm proud of is I've remembered the follow up question, and just I can sure. I've been there, Doc. You know, I've sat and I've spoken about it. I've sat on my couch when I was drinking on more than one occasion, with my gun in my mouth and asking God to give me the courage to kill myself. And it's just like, give yourself 5 more minutes, give yourself another hour, give yourself another day. Just because until that, it's, you know, this is what we learn in recovery. The feelings are like waves that are washing over you. It might be for 30 days, a month, a year, but they stop eventually. And then there's calm. So you just have to get through that period. And it is that isolation is you're removing yourself from the opportunity of people to contradict what you are hearing in your head and what you're believing. And it's just like, sure, get in front of someone, get help. Because like for me, hello, look at this. I have a radio show. I get to chat to you. This is
congratulations.
We come back from South Africa champs, where we're the South African powerlifting championships. My company was live streaming it. I was getting to take photographs and announce, and life is more amazing than I could ever have imagined. And it took me changing the chemical setup in my brain. It takes like up to 2 years for brain chemistry for an addict to normalize to a degree, you know, and you learn then, okay, I'm not going to trust myself. I'm going to find people I trust and I'm going to ask them, is this a good idea? Should I buy this? Should I do that? All of these opportunities are available to us if we just give ourselves a little bit more time. But when you said, you know, you just want to rest, that's what it is. And that hits me very, very hard, because that's exactly what it is. I just needed a break for those few moments from what I was feeling. But the tool that I potentially would have picked was a permanent one. And we all deserve, you know, there's nothing that is so bad in this world that has the right to take us out of it. And we deserve to be here, and the world deserves to have us here. So I just wanted to stress that point. And now I've forgotten what the next point was, but can we talk about, are there, just before we go to ads, are there specific demographics within South Africa? Okay. Is there are there sort of factors that come into child rearing, nutrition, stress, stimulation of the child, environments that can develop or enhance the development of bipolar. Sorry, I'm still a little bit emotional on what we spoke about. See, Craig's giving me the ad break sign. So we'll answer those questions, Doc, when we're back from this ad.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
You've been listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show, and we're chatting with Dr. Clementine Chawane, psychiatrist, and we've been talking about bipolar, the associated symptoms and treatment. Just before we went to ads, we were chatting about demographics and what are the situations around growing up, raising a child, our environment that may contribute to bipolar. Doc, the floor is yours.
Thank you so much. So when it comes to the causes for mental illness, we have a genetic component and we have the psychosocial component. So bipolar has very high association with genetic components. And so that means that if my parents have bipolar, I carry their genes. The genes might not express in my generation, might express, maybe my children might have the illness. So it's not always that everybody who carries the gene of bipolar or schizophrenia will definitely have an illness like it is with other diseases like Huntington's disease. If you have the gene, you will have the illness. So the thing about bipolar and mental illness is that there is a large component that is dependent on the environment. And the genes is something that we cannot control, but the environment is something that is within our control. So when it comes to general demographics, females were found to be more at higher risk of having bipolar or being diagnosed with bipolar versus males. I think socially that is affected by the fact that males don't generally seek help like females would, because that's how we gather stats, right? It's how many people do the survey and how many people seek help. And so there was biasness towards the females. The age group is around the age, it starts around late adolescent. So that is the age that when most adolescents will start experiencing mental illnesses, and not all adolescents that are starting to show symptoms of mood dysregulation are necessarily bipolar. You know, so part of development as well include mood dysregulation, but that's a time when we must look out for this, especially in patients who are having a genetic predisposition. Mm-hmm. Things like trauma. So South Africa is one of the places that has high association of violence and trauma. Families without fathers, the poverty, all those things play a role. It's more like it pulls the trigger earlier on. Mm-hmm. So if I have the genes, I'm loaded with a gun. But then if the environment is controlled, the gene might express later on in life and have allowed me to develop and have finished school and have started working and have settled down. But if the environment is stressful, it sort of like pulls the trigger. And so the illness starts expressing itself very earlier on, disrupting our lives. And so the earlier the illness, the longer the prognosis. When it comes to race, all of us are in the same WhatsApp group. And so it doesn't respect whether you're black or white or Indian. All of us, when it comes to the race, we are the same, as well as socioeconomic status. I think patients who are more financially able are able to seek help faster and therefore prevent the progression of the illness and the disability thereof. Those in poor socioeconomic statuses tend to present very late, and by then a lot of things have happened. And so that's what you would see when somebody now is a homeless person, is because they miss an opportunity to seek help earlier on in life. Accessibility to a major role in
So, Doc, I think we just had a little bit of an issue there with your network signal, but I got the gist of it. And I think the big thing, as you said, and my takeaway from this is, one, your race does not mean you are precluded from the possibility of bipolar. So if you are presenting symptoms, please get help. And your socioeconomic position does also not preclude you from that. And maybe that's something for parents and for people to look at. And I think lastly is understand that the homeless person that's on the street, and again, for myself, it's important, the alcoholic that has hit rock bottom and the drunk that continues to drink that hasn't gotten help may well be self-medicating with alcohol, with drugs, and these are the things that they actually may be doing, that it's not a weakness of character and it's not a choice. And I think as a society, we need to be empathetic to that. We have a few questions from our guests, if we could go through that. And one from Jenna says, has the incidence of mental health diagnosis increased with the increase in cannabis use? So I suppose, are we seeing more of these disorders presenting or diseases presenting with the increase in cannabis use?
Yes, definitely so. In South Africa and internationally. And so you can check out the reports maybe even in New York, when they have legalized the use of pot for recreational purposes, that they have found that there were more mental health illnesses and there were more people seeking medical help with cannabis-related illnesses, whether it was violence, car accidents, and all that. And so, yes, ever since in South Africa, we have decriminalized the use of cannabis, there has been an increase in mental health services. And the thing is, the type of symptoms that we see, or the type of patients that we see, usually presents with psychosis, so very disorganized behavior, aggression. We see a lot of adolescents coming in with change in attitude, change in respect, and poor academic performances at school. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a lot of patients presenting with mania, and we're seeing a lot of patients presenting with anxiety and having used cannabis to help with their anxiety, which then worsens their anxiety. So yes, there has been an increase in mental health ever since cannabis has been decriminalized in South Africa. So there is a huge association. It has always been there, but people always doubted it. But now we have, even though it's not so much a clinical evidence, but from a non-clinical setting, we can see that people are suffering from mental illnesses ever since then.
Yeah. And I could have said absolutely, and I agree with you, absolutely yes, because just speaking on the simplest form and something that we spoke about earlier, you're changing your brain chemistry, you're putting chemicals into your brain. Whatever the drug is, whether that's alcohol or cannabis or cat or cocaine, you're changing that chemistry and you don't know what's lurking there and you don't know what the tree is. For myself, I didn't remember the abuse. I had locked it out, but I went to alcohol to numb that pain.
Yeah.
Using it deprives me of developing the mental skills, the relationships, and the support networks that I need to deal with it and live life without it. And that, is with any drug. So I'm very firm on that. We have one more question. I'm going to read through it. It's a little bit long, and then we'll go to the ad break, and then if we can answer that after our ad break, please. Okay. The moment of pulling the trigger is a marvelous, peaceful moment, a miracle. Voice stopped me, but I've never found peace, and it's 10 years. There are a few people, not even the therapists, who can understand that moment or fully understand a person who has tried to get on balance and can't find the path. Only those who have been there can understand. Every day I want to go home, and that was a message from Mike. My sense is, we talking about the peace and the stability. If we could answer that when we back from the break, Doc.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
You're listening to 101.9 High FM. It's the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show. I'm chatting with the wonderful Dr. Clementine Chiwane, psychiatrist. We're talking about bipolar and, I suppose, mental illness. Doc, before we went to the break, we had a message from Mike. And just as we wrap up the show, I'd just like to get your thoughts on that.
Okay. All right. So that was a very emotional message from Mike. And I just wanted to say to Mike, I'm sorry you have to leave with this burden. And everybody who comes to us has a fantasy that we can take away the pain and the sorrow, that they wish it was a tumor we could cut out and they never have to live with it. You know, but I always say to my patients as well, we can't cure 98% of illnesses, whether it's high blood pressure, whether it's cancer, diabetes, you know, and so all of us are living with something. And I know that mental illness is heavier because it's something that sometimes you can't even express to other people. Sometimes you run out of words trying to, you know, capture what it is that you're really feeling inside. And so that is the burden that most people are living with. And I feel what I could say is that you are not in this journey alone. And so going out and finding other people that understand when you say, I'm feeling sad today, and you don't have to justify why you are feeling sad, because most of the question we get asked is, but why? And there is no answer in this world that could ever justify why somebody feels the way they do. And so there are a lot of people. You can find them via SADC, which is South African Depression and Anxiety Organization, that has support groups almost everywhere. I know that almost everywhere in Johannesburg, at least, you know, where you can find a support group and you can meet with people physically and they can help you. The antidepressant or all the other medication that we give doesn't fully take away the illness, because we can't cure it. It's a chronic illness that we live with. And so some days are sometimes better than others. Some patients are able to reach resolution. Most patients tell me the burden is not as heavy, at least not every day. I live with it, but it's not heavy. It is bearable. We just want to try and make it bearable. We can't promise to take it away. So, Mike, you are not alone. And I'm asking that you keeping on and just live, even though it is heavy. I sometimes think happiness is an illusion anyway. How do I know that I'm happier than my next door neighbor? And they're also looking at me thinking, oh, she looks happier than me. And so sometimes when we take off the mask and speak about how is it that we really feel, most people are battling with deep emotions. And some of them could be depression or mental illness. It's just that they haven't thought of seeking help as yet. So, Mike, that's all I can say. There isn't anything better I could say to. I wish I could take it away, but I can't. In this world, we will suffer, but there is a promise of a rest. And so we just have to wait for nature to kick in rather than to hurry the process ourselves.
And that, you know, Doc, I was going to ask you to wrap up. But that is the best wrap up that I've heard. It's absolutely phenomenal. And I think the thing for Mike and what I can say is what I have gotten from the support groups in Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, Overeaters Anonymous, any of those meetings that I go to. And when I share, and having had 18 years of sobriety, I'm invited often to share. And then I talk to people when they come to me afterwards and I tell them what they're thinking and feeling. And they think it's somehow I'm reading their minds, but it's not. Yeah. I'm feeling and thinking the exact same thing. We're walking the same path. And when you understand it's not you and you're not alone, that there are others, that you can go and sit in a room with a group of people and not say a word, and they will understand exactly what you're going through by the mere fact that you're there.
You learn
to understand that they're there, and we want you there. That's the thing. You have to be there. And Doc, I think just as we wrap up, for me, the one thing that I got, and it's from a song by American country and Western band Brooks and Dunn, and it says, "Don't believe everything that you think."
Yeah.
And I'd like to add, "Don't believe everything that you feel." Because I've gone like, yeah, I'm feeling this. What if it doesn't matter? I'm getting on with my day.
Yeah.
So thank you for your time, Doctor. We really appreciate having you on the show. You've been a fantastic guest. And just to our listeners, get help. Speak to someone, explain to someone, and to the public. Understand that what people are going through, their behavior may not be directed at you. It may be their pain. It may be their mental illness. And just be kind. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday Show here on 101.9 High FM. Thank you, Craig, for pushing the buttons. Thank you, Sina, for my wonderful guest. And I'll see you guys next week.